So am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
And the game going back, he's gonna try it again. Uh-huh. One more pedigree. He's gonna scramble him up the eye. Look out! Buckles! Back money dropped the game. He came out of it. WWE, do you believe in miracles? John Michael believed in himself. Michael believed in his ability to win this match, and he has survived it.
Welcome, everyone, to Review Away. It's John Pollock and a recovering Wei Ting. And Wei, it's been a couple of days since we did our Impact review. Are you feeling any better? You still have your surgical mask on.
No, I'm actually not feeling any better. In fact, I feel exactly the same.
Amazing.
As our last review.
It's like instead of 2 days, it's like 2 hours have passed.
It's unbelievable. Slow recovery.
Maybe the sound of Always by Saliva will make you feel a bit better because... I was going to make some connection between your saliva and being sick, but I'm not going to. It'll sound way too weird. It's the Survivor Series 2002, and this event 8 years ago.
8 years. Yeah, what were you doing at this time?
I was in my last year of high school, mm-hmm. and at this point, a lot of my friends, we'd always get together for WWE pay-per-views every month.
Were you in your last year, or were you in grade 12?
I was in OAC. Because I graduated in 2003 in the spring, so this would have been the fall
of
2002.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, I would always get together with my friends during this 2002 and 3 period,
mm-hmm.
and we would watch the wrestling pay-per-view. So I had mm-hmm. quite a big group, and then eventually, a few years later, they stopped coming about a year later when I started working with the law, obviously. And then a few years later, we got back into watching UFC pay-per-views together, and now they don't watch anything.
And you don't even hang out with these friends anymore.
I see them very rarely, and I felt kind of bad because about a month ago, I went to one of my friends in that group got married, and he got married on a Sunday night. I went. The wedding was at 5 o'clock,
uh-huh.
and it started very promptly. I was very happy. I thought there'd be a lot of downtime between the wedding. They got all their photos done during the day, so it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then it goes into the dinner and then the party afterwards. And at about 9:45, I go to him and I'm like, I got to take off. What do you mean you got to take off? I got to do the law tonight. You didn't take the night off work? And I said, no.
Oh,
because it's not fair.
It's not fair.
It's not like I can call in sick and just... It's not like I have somebody who can just fill in for me.
John, you took work off to go to a Spice Girls concert. You couldn't take the same amount of work off?
Wait, there's one person in the world who can fill in for me, and it's you. So if it's a dire emergency, I would call you. I can't just call somebody random.
Hold on,
to come in.
So Spice Girls was a dire emergency.
Spice Girls was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see in Toronto.
And your friend getting married isn't? You're a good friend that you went to high school
I was
with?
At the wedding. It's not like I blew it off, but I wasn't going to stay there the whole night.
Still, it's not like you could have really enjoyed yourself.
I had a great time. I was there for almost 5 hours. That's more than enough time to put in.
It says something about your loyalties.
Well, Wei, when you get married... I will stay for the whole party, okay?
I will be sure not to get married on a Sunday.
Well, you would be best served not to.
Nor a Monday, nor a Thursday, because those days now are required for me to catch up on Raw and Impact, which many of you have caught already, and we appreciate the feedback that you've already left.
Yes, for those that watched or listened to Review and Impact, mm-hmm. our very clever name, thank you for your feedback, whether you liked it or did not like it. So now... Your schedule is full every week. Sunday nights, we got the law. Monday morning, you can catch Review Away.
Or Tuesday afternoon, actually. For review.
No, I'm saying Review Away.
That's right.
You're confusing all our shows, Wei. Tuesday afternoon is Review of Raw.
Right.
And then Friday, Review and Impact. We're trying to keep these names as basic as possible, folks, just so you know what name, what review you're listening to. Mm-hmm. And for those that request any more, we apologized. I believe one person emailed us asking if we could do a non-wrestling review called Review a World. And everyone, I'm sorry. This is our world, and there's absolutely no room for anything more than what we do now.
This is our world, exactly.
Oh. Let's get into it, everybody. Survivor Series 2002, November the 17th, Madison Square Garden, New York City. The opening video shows Brock Lesnar defeating The Undertaker. My, how things have changed. 8 years later,
oh, yeah.
The match everyone wants to see, Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker. Not going to happen, but it was happening 8 years ago in the WWE.
Not only was it happening, it was happening in Hell in a Cell.
Yes, that was the prior month's pay-per-view No Mercy.
That's right.
And this led into tonight's WWE title match with Brock Lesnar against The Big Show. Now, for those of you who are mixed martial arts fans that have followed Brock Lesnar in his journey towards the UFC heavyweight title and his loss to Cain Velasquez, he's a very big man. However, if you were to look at him in 2002, he was a jacked individual.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
This guy had to have been easily 310 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say, but he definitely looked it. He definitely had a more of a bodybuilder's physique rather than an athlete's physique
yes.
that we see today.
Looked a very different look for Brock Lesnar eight mm-hmm. years ago. And they really put over the brand extension at the start of this show where they show highlights from both sides, where we have Bischoff's product on Raw, mm-hmm. and they show highlights of, like, hot lesbian action and bringing in the Elimination Chamber. It's mm-hmm. a very gimmick-based brand.
Right.
It's entertainment that Bischoff is pushing. And then they compare it to Stephanie McMahon, who's got this incredible athlete, and Brock Lesnar is their champion. They've got a three-way tag tonight with six of the top performers in the company. It's much more your traditional pro wrestling presentation, which Paul Heyman was booking at the time, and
yes.
I really enjoyed this contrast at the time.
Yeah.
Raw was not a great product at this time. I was really not a fan of it at all, but I did like that they were at least different, even if that difference was good and bad. It really was. Raw was bad at this time.
Raw was awful. Raw was happening at the time. This was while all that KD Vick shit was going
yep.
on. Meanwhile, SmackDown had these incredible matches headlined mostly by these SmackDown Six, the six tag teams comprised of Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit, Los Guerreros and Edge and Rey Mysterio, that would just put on spectacular matches every single week. And also they had Lesnar on top, working programs with various guys. Yes.
This was when Lesnar was really like his first couple of months, he was very green mm-hmm. and you could see that, but already at this point, like 6 months in, like this guy was getting it and
yep.
he was starting to become a really good performer, especially when he was in there with talent that was at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
Like his match with The Undertaker at No Mercy, you look on paper and be like, ugh, I don't know what to expect. It was a really solid match
mm-hmm.
and he was booked tremendously well during this period.
This was one of the few. Back then, while the brand extension first occurred, which is, April of...
2002.
Right yeah. after WrestleMania, they completely split the schedule so that the pay-per-views even were single brand only. So this was... I guess King of the Ring was the first one, right? King of the Ring would have been the first one where the two brands actually got together on pay-per-view, right?
I believe so.
And then they did SummerSlam, and now Survivor Series. This would only be the third time that the brands would meet together on a single show. And, I mean, Raw was pretty shitty, but they had one great moment in SummerSlam of that year with the Michaels return match against Triple H.
Yes.
That match was just fantastic, because especially, you know, it had been 4 years since Michaels wrestled, and then we all heard about how bad his back was. And in that match itself, working
the whole
against
story
Hunter,
of the match was working his back, and it was one of the most
Triple
incredible
H,
matches to watch.
Yeah, Triple H just destroyed Michaels' back, like giving him a backbreaker right onto a steel chair. I didn't even watch the pay per view until later on, but just watching those clips, I was like, holy shit. This is a guy who retired because of his back, taking all this damage.
Yeah.
And that was a spectacular match. This pay-per-view would feature Michaels' return in his second match
yes,
back.
Yes, they had built it up where he was taken out on a stretcher at SummerSlam, was in a wheelchair, and then He popped up from his wheelchair, and he was put. This was his second match back. And also in the opening video, after the SmackDown preview, they went over to Raw, and they discussed the evolution from Hulk Hogan all the way up to Triple H in this linear picture montage, and introducing the Elimination Chamber, which would debut on this show. And we got our two sets of ring announcers. We have Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, who were positioned much like the Nitro broadcast, were away from the ring and closer to the entrance. Mm-hmm. And then we had Michael Cole and Taz, who were at ringside. And just little things that they tried to make it different, which I applauded for the company, and something that we see none of today. It's just, it's all WWE.
It's different. At the same time, I found that particular setup a little odd. Just because, you know, you would have these Raw matches. Meanwhile, you would see Cole and Taz ringside, whereas the actual announcers were so far away.
I liked it because it was something instantly associated with WCW, and you had Bischoff running it. So I didn't mind that at all. I'm all for the little things about this and trying to make at least each brand come across as two different products. We kick off with a Raw match. It's a six-person tables match. We've got Bubba Ray Dudley, Spike Dudley, and Jeff Hardy opening up the pay-per-view against Rosie, Jamal, and Rico. Rosie and Jamal comprised 3-minute warning, and Rico was their hairstylist manager.
Another point that stuck out about the brand extension was the fact that they broke up all these established tag teams. Here, especially, you saw Bubba Ray and D-Von break up. Bubba Ray was had a brief singles run on Raw as like this hardcore champion doofus, and then Jeff Hardy broke up with Matt, of course. And Jeff had some good matches. He had particularly a good match with The Undertaker in a ladder match. But I mean, both of these guys, most of their fame still at this time came from the tag teams.
So let's get into this match here. We have a lot of big spots in this match, a little sloppy at times. The crowd was so hot to start this, and they were throughout the night. We see some of the highlights included. Rosie, lost myself here on my notes. We see a cross body by Hardy, and Rosie cannot catch him here and ends up dropping Jeff Hardy. Spike attempted the Dudley dog and then was caught by 3-minute warning, and he has just swung through a table. This was looked vicious, where he went through the table, like almost like a hardcore Holly's Alabama jam or something.
Alabama
slam. Yeah. Sorry, that was the Bobby Eaton move. And he just threw him like face first through this table. Looked incredibly painful. Uh-huh. Rosie then set up a table near one of the exits at Madison Square Garden, and then Bubba came to help Jeff Hardy, who was out there with Rosie. Rosie gets set up onto the table, and Jeff Hardy climbs up to this entranceway at Madison Square Garden and delivers a swanton off of the entrance through Rosie onto the table.
It looked fantastic.
It looked insane. This was the same spot Jeff Hardy did at the Royal Rumble tables match at the same arena.
Yes, yes. This time they actually, I don't know if it came across, because John, you watched the live tape of it, whereas I watched the home video version of this. So I don't know if this came across to you or if they just edited it into mine, but while they had Jeff Hardy stand up in the on top of the ramp, they had a beautiful camera shot of him, of his back basically, facing towards the ring, and I don't know if they cut that out, or I don't know if they...
No, they did have that shot. It was a great shot where he's standing on that entrance, and you see him just pause for a minute while the crowd's just going crazy here. Then, like, literally 2 minutes later, they have this spot in the ring where Rico puts, I believe, is it Bubba?
Bubba's
onto the
on
table?
The table, yes.
And Rico climbs up and is teasing a moonsault. Now, the spot here was that Jeff Hardy would come and stop Rico. Jeff Hardy had just done this insane spot, and they had booked him to do this save spot like a minute later. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous that this spot wouldn't have like taken Jeff out for the majority of the match. But nonetheless, Rico is just killing time here, standing. He's about to lose his balance on the top rope, cannot deliver a moonsault to save his life if he had to.
And he did moonsaults, didn't he?
Well,
I thought that was part of his repertoire.
He sure wasn't doing one here in this spot had Jeff been not showing up for this spot.
Yeah.
So he's about to fall, and then we just hear him yell,
"Here goes Rico! Big moonsault! Hey! Oh, he's about to lose his balance.
Come on, Jeff! Come
And Hardy finally makes it to the other rope, which is like perpendicular to the rope he needed to shake, and shook that one.
I think that was the actual spot. He was just supposed to shake the rope, not necessarily run into attack Rico.
Well, he wasn't even shaking the rope that attached to that turnbuckle.
Still, you don't have to.
What, they all just shake?
It's all connected. All
right. So that spot was pretty well blown. This is kind of where Jeff Hardy fell apart in this match.
This, by the way, this spot was edited from my version of the tape.
Not mine.
Because they made it seem pretty seamless. You know, they just cut from Rico being there to a perfect close-up of Jeff Hardy by the rope shaking it so that you could exactly see what he was doing.
This was just a great line from Rico that would be repeated from fans for so long. Come on, Jeff, goddammit. Then we see Hardy. He used to do this spot. He doesn't do it as much, where he would run across the barricade and then into like a clothesline. He did this to Jamal, but he slipped on the barricade as Jamal was holding a table, and he fell into the table. Like,
yeah,
looked very painful and very awkward.
And the table still broke, so I wasn't really sure what the point of that was. Like, was that supposed to be Jeff's elimination, you think? Jeff Rosie just holding the table for Jeff Hardy to run into?
That would have been a stupid elimination.
Yes.
It would be like he eliminated himself.
So then anyway, Jamal...
Wait, there was a...
Sorry, this is Jamal, not Rosie.
Yeah. Yes, this is Jamal. And right after that spot, Jerry Lawler states, this might be a good time for Jeff to call it a night. And then Jamal eventually sets Hardy up onto a table and delivers a splash off the top rope through the table on the floor.
On the floor, which looked insane.
Yes.
And I guess if that was an improvised spot, then wow, what a thing to improvise.
Jamal sets up Bubba for, we're just going to splash you through off the top through the floor. Jamal then climbs up to give Bubba a Hurricane Rana, but he slips coming up, and then Bubba recovers and delivers a powerbomb to Jamal. And it's at this point,
That was the finish
to the match, wasn't it? No, Rico was still in this. Because 3-minute warning got back in, and they helped Rico, and it was 3-on-1 on Bubba. And then we get D-Von running into the ring. He was on SmackDown at this point.
As Brother D-Von. So this whole time...
Yeah. Reverend D-Von.
Sorry, whatever.
Reverend D-Von.
Reverend D-Von.
And
so
Deacon Bautista.
Exactly. So it had been months since these two had, I guess, united, and they both had... failed singles runs.
Miserable runs.
And this was D-Von and Bubba Ray's big reunion.
And there was a giant pop. They picked a great city to do this in. Mm-hmm. And they delivered a 3D to Rico through the table, so the babyfaces get the win. This match featured a ton of spots. Not all hit perfectly, but this was just...
It was
fine
good.
For an opener, and the crowd was really into it and kind of elevated the match.
Yeah, the table spots, most of them looked very good. And that's really what the crowd wanted. So a good opener. Absolutely.
A painful Monday morning for Jeff Hardy, though.
Sure.
Then, this was definitely not in yours, but it was in mine. Because all of a sudden, we just cut to Stacy Keibler at the World.
No, I got that.
The fuck up?
Oh, no, probably not. What
we
happened?
Cut to Stacy Keibler, who just suddenly says, you're on. Hey, it's great. And then we cut back to the arena.
Wow, no, I didn't know.
And then we go back to Stacy Keibler, who just no-sells that there was any problems, and throws to a live performance by Saliva. And Saliva performs Always from the World, and we get B-roll of the matches tonight.
Didn't Saliva just play at that year's WrestleMania?
Yes.
They just, like...
They love Saliva.
Yeah, yes. They just, they have this panel of artists that they just keep going back.
The thought process of this was fine, where you had the theme song to the pay-per-view and the B-roll of the matches, but my God, like a half an hour into this show, I was sick of this song.
Me too. Always. I was sick of this song once I heard it.
And what was funny here was that during the B-roll, they showed the exact same Lesnar Big Show highlights that they used from the opening show video, like verbatim, shot for shot. Then we go to...
I always thought the music acts were kind of pointless on the wrestling show.
We go backstage and Rob Van Dam is stretching for the Elimination Chamber match. And then we go to the SmackDown announcers for the first time tonight. Michael Cole is in a leather jacket and he looks very funny in comparison to today. Mm-hmm. They were trying to make him hip back then. He was the hip voice of the WWE.
Was he?
I guess.
The leather jacket?
Leather means hip. Okay. And that brings us to our second match of the night. It's Jamie Noble against Billy Kidman for the Cruiserweight Championship.
Noble at the time was the longest reigning champ in the WWE, meaning nobody gave a shit about the Cruiserweight title and forgot to take it off of him.
Yep, and then they remembered during the booking of this show. Early on, Kidman, they had very little time here. They were almost going for their finishing sequences, almost right out of the gate. Kidman went for the shooting star press, but Nydia, who was in Noble's corner, pulled Noble out. The storyline here was that Kidman had pinned Noble twice on TV going into this match. And then we see Noble come back with a tiger bomb for a two count, then a top rope DDT by Kidman for a two count, and he gets the two count here. Noble then one-ups him here by hitting a draping DDT off of the top, which Kidman takes like going vertically into the ring.
That's
like
how
head
he always,
first.
That's how he always took his DDTs.
The facials here on Jimmy Corderas were fantastic. Like, it sold like this guy was dead.
Jimmy Corderas, by the way, coming up later on this.
Yes, where we discuss this match and some others from this pay-per-view. And then Kidman climbs to the top rope after making a comeback. Nydia tries to stop him but is knocked to the floor. Noble gets knocked back down into the receiving position, and Kidman hits the shooting star press for the win and is your new Cruiserweight champion. That long reign is over.
Yeah, that huge reign. Yes, after, even though Noble lost twice to Kidman already on TV.
Yes, Noble was just a loser. He lost three times in a row.
Yes. Nonetheless, a very good match.
Just in case Billy Kidman got over, we went to a backstage vignette where Kurt Angle's watching this match and says, if Kidman can win, then we can win the tag titles. If this dork can win a title. Angle calls himself the team captain, and Chris Benoit is very upset. This was goofy Kurt Angle. This was ridiculously silly Kurt Angle that no one cared about. Kurt Angle doesn't want to shake Chris Benoit's hand, but instead he hugs him. And they finish the segment hugging.
Yeah, and Benoit gets an awkward look on his face. I mean, he was comedic, but I found him entertaining. I cared about him.
I never liked this version
really of
Kurt Angle, where he's just too over-the-top goofy. At one point in his character, I just found that it got to be too much, and it was like, okay, it's time to present this guy a bit more seriously. And this was fine for when they first introduced his character, but I thought we had gotten past it. Then they show Chris Jericho backstage, and he's hitting the plexiglass and getting himself amped up for the Elimination Chamber.
The bulletproof plexiglass.
Yep. In case anyone had a gun. Then we go to a segment which was kind of like GTV, but it was called F-View. Get it?
Yeah.
F-View.
Yep.
And it shows Victoria in like a janitor's stall. And it's just this great promo where she's looking into the mirror.
Mirror, mirror, on the wall. Who's the prettiest diva of all? What? You think Trish Stratus is prettier? How can you say that to me? What are you talking about? You're crazy! You're so crazy! You know what I think of you?
And she gets so angry at this mirror, and she destroys the mirror. And it's just to get her over as being crazy. And I thought this was great. I remember when this first aired, and I thought it was so funny.
Yeah.
You did not.
I didn't really care for it. It just seems like they always have these characters, especially up against Trish, whether it be, Mickie James, or just a crazy bitch going up against them.
At least she wasn't wearing a shirt that said Cougar.
Yeah, at least there wasn't a girl appearing in the mirror.
If we had high definition, maybe we would have seen Katie Burchill in there.
Yeah, that's right.
Summer. Next up, it's Trish Stratus and Victoria for the women's title in a hardcore rules match.
Yeah, to set this up, they recapped it, and they showed this heat, like really hard chair shot Victoria delivered to Trish leading up to this to set up this hardcore match between women.
The storyline is that the WWE was interested in both when they were models, but they only signed Trish Stratus. And Victoria was pissed that she was not chosen.
She became crazy.
And why was she not as good as Trish Stratus?
I don't know.
Lots of trash can shots in the ring here. Lots of trash can lid shots. Victoria at one point grabs a mirror from underneath the ring. And I was thinking to myself, they cannot possibly be doing a spot with a mirror.
Why not?
It just seems like a pretty heavy-duty angle for a third match in for
that's
a women's title.
No, that's true.
Victoria pulls Trish off of the corner and Trish tries to come back off of the corner with a bulldog. Did not look good. Did not look good at all. Victoria then grabs a fire extinguisher from underneath the ring, and there's this giant stall. It was like 5 hours of just waiting for her to get this extinguisher to work, And then finally, the extinguisher went off, and that was the finish. She shot a fire extinguisher into the face of Trish.
Those are devastating, man.
Have you ever been hit with one?
No, I haven't, but I hear you can get bronchitis or...
But would it knock you out cold?
They'll probably really choke you up, maybe disorient you.
See, no one, the average person doesn't know that. No, the average person has never been hit with a fire extinguisher. I can watch someone go through a table or get hit with a mirror, and I understand. That computes with me. What if that hurts?
Okay, hold on a second. If you can be hurt by salt, if you can be blinded by salt enough for a three count, you can certainly be
hurt
enough.
That's powder. That's powder. I wouldn't want to get powder in my eyes.
This is dry ice. This is dry ice.
It looks like wind. Looks like a heavy wind.
It's really heavy wind. Why don't we test that out sometime?
Okay.
Blast you in the face with the fire.
Anyway, a snap suplex later, Victoria got the win. She had a bleeding nose after. This match is not good.
I thought it was all right, but listen, you're judging this maybe from a male perspective.
No, I'm judging this based on a wrestling fan perspective. It was a match with blowing spots and a shitty finish.
I was looking at this, looking at it like, here are two women who don't usually work this style, and I thought they actually did a pretty good job. I thought it was definitely a lot more fluid, these two, than a lot of the women that we see today. And they worked hard, you know? Like, I just got the sense that
I'm not saying they didn't work hard, but I just think certain things were not executed great in this match, and it hurt.
Okay. Well, I give them a certain amount of leeway because, you know, it is smaller bodies taking these hard things. And personally, like, I felt kind of uncomfortable seeing this style, done by the women. But I thought they did a good job for what it was.
All right. Backstage, Booker T is jumping and shadow boxing to get ready for the chamber match. Then Jonathan Coachman is with Eric Bischoff. And Bischoff says, you can expect history and the future together tonight. No idea what that means. And he has outdone Stephanie McMahon with the Elimination Chamber. So trying to push that rivalry between the two, even though they had just made out on television 2 weeks ago, which was an angle quickly forgotten, if you recall.
No, I don't remember.
Remember that angle? It was like a Halloween costume contest, and Eric Bischoff dressed up as Vince McMahon and then took his mask off and made out with Stephanie McMahon, and it was never referenced again.
That is creepy on so many different levels.
Very, very creepy. The Big Show then walks in to Bischoff, and he says it was a mistake to trade him to SmackDown and that he's going to win the title tonight. Then we go to Brock Lesnar's locker room, and Paul Heyman is just standing by, and he's nervous about Big Show. He's worried about the effects that Brock Lesnar has had from the Hell in a Cell match, and he will do. And then he notes, this is the key line, I will do everything in my power to make sure my client leaves as WWE champion.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes us to match number 4, Brock Lesnar and The Big Show for the WWE title. Now, some legitimate backstory here. Lesnar was going into this match with a broken rib that he had suffered, I believe, on television, and had further injured at a house show. And there's the video playing back here where the whole story is that Paul Heyman feels that Brock Lesnar cannot beat The Big Show and that he's taking on too much in this match. They were working super hard to get Big Show over.
Oh, yeah.
As a monster.
Big Show at this time, he had just come from Raw. And on Raw, he really was the same Big Show that we pretty much all know him as now. Just this goofy comedy guy who would occasionally do some hardcore matches.
And dance.
Yeah, but the moment he arrived in the SmackDown, like, his look changed. He's, Heyman put him in pants rather than, the goofy singlet. And
he still wore the singlet, but he wore it with jeans.
Yeah, well, with black pants over top. But it was just like he was completely rebranded to look like what he was supposed to look. Just this giant that was devastating and a legitimate threat to this guy, Brock Lesnar, who was undefeated up until this point. Well, not undefeated, not pinned up until this point.
I would go so far as to say this was the most over Big Show ever was during these couple of months.
Perhaps, yeah.
So, at this time, Lesnar was still kind of a heel, but was very much getting turned at this point. Like, the crowd here was huge chants of, let's go Lesnar. I haven't heard chants like that in so long in a wrestling show. Like, these people reacted to this match like it was a fight or like a boxing contest. Like, they believe this to be like a legitimate event. It was just a very, very cool atmosphere for this match. And we see Lesnar hit a double leg takedown. They fight on the floor, and Lesnar gets thrown into the post ribs first. Then Lesnar hits a German suplex in the ring. He's doing this with a broken rib. Then there's a ref bump, and Lesnar hits a belly-to-belly suplex. Heyman then throws a chair into the ring. Lesnar gets the chair, but Show punches the chair and then takes a chair shot right to the head. Lesnar then hits the F5, and a new referee comes in to count three, but at two, Paul Heyman pulls the referee out, punches the referee, and then Lesnar sees that Heyman has turned on him, chases him around the ring, and gets back into the ring. Big Show hits a chair shot to the ribs of Lesnar, and then a choke slam onto the chair for the win. This match went less than 5 minutes, and then Heyman and Show ran to the back, exited in a limo with the WWE title. This crowd was just apeshit for Brock Lesnar, and just popping huge for these power spots he was doing.
Especially that F5, because a big question going into this match, both from a storyline perspective and from a legitimate curiosity perspective, from a physical standpoint, could this guy lift up the Big Show for his finisher? And with the moment that he actually did, the crowd went nuts. I thought that was a great angle to play into this match, because it puts the focus on the match itself, whether, you know, this guy Brock Lesnar can actually lift the Big Show and do all these moves. And the moment that Paul Heyman's face, you see him when he realizes that Brock has just realized that he just screwed him, Heyman's facials, priceless.
Yeah, this was really well done. This was actually Brock Lesnar's first loss on television for the WWE since being brought up.
A lot of people had lost via DQ, but he had never been pinned before.
A lot of people kind of criticize this, being that, yes, Lesnar is injured right now. He's going to be out of action. He was going to be out for like 5 or 6 weeks, and they thought that it would be best to take the title off of him because he can't go work house shows. So that was a kind of interesting note there that we'll go back to later.
I hated to see the pairing of Brock and Heyman dissolve so quickly.
Yeah, it was way too early, but they clearly saw Brock as a babyface, and Heyman does not work as a babyface.
Yeah, and it's just so different. What really stood up for me, and I picked the show not realizing this, but what really stood out to me was how much more accepting I was of this Big Show title win compared to the one we reviewed last week. Completely.
It was a completely different set of circumstances, and Heyman was so solidly behind Big Show to make him this monster.
Well, think about it. Like, the guy made Taz look like a giant. What do you think he'd be able to do with an actual giant? Like, I came out of this match really seeing Big Show as a legitimate title contender and champion.
Like, had Heyman been able to book Big Show in ECW? Just because everyone there was so small in ECW, he would have stood out like... He would have just been a gigantic star there.
Yeah.
We keep going here. And next up, this was a match that had huge expectations going into it. We had Edge and Rey Mysterio, who were the tag team champions, defending against Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit and Los Guerreros, Eddie and Chavo. And leading up to this, the tag titles had been created a month ago with Angle and Benoit winning the titles. And then they lost the titles in a 2 out of 3 falls match on television to Edge and Mysterio. And
which was rated match of the year that year in the Observer, actually.
The pay-per-view match, the year before.
No Mercy.
Yeah, that was a match of the year for 2002. Yep. So they had not presented these three teams all against one another. So expectations were just huge. Everyone expected a match of the year from these three teams going into this. We see a video that teased the problems between Angle and Benoit, how they lost the titles to Edge and Rey. And before the match, what a great segue here, they show Al Wilson and Dawn Marie in the crowd with the key engaged to be married as we get set for this match of the year.
Yeah.
The complete contrast of SmackDown.
Yeah.
Angle just gets a gigantic reaction coming out here to New York wearing a knee brace. Early on, Rey Mysterio is having trouble with his footing. He's coming off the ropes, and he was just having trouble here early on. The heat really picks up when Eddie Guerrero hits a running powerbomb to Rey, and it's reversed in midair into a Hurricane Rana. Some other spots included a drop toehold by Angle to Edge, and then applied the ankle lock as Chris Benoit applied the crossface. Just an awesome visual, seeing the crossface and ankle lock together, similar to how Benoit and Jericho did their combination finishes. Mm-hmm. Then we see the rolling Germans delivered to Edge by Benoit. Eddie hits a frog splash, and then Benoit breaks it up with a headbutt. Chavo then hits Benoit with one of the tag titles. Benoit recovers, and at this point, Chavo had thrown the title to Angle, so Benoit assumed it was Kurt Angle in our Rob Van Dam booking. And Benoit is then drop-kicked into Ray, which was another spot from Impact this past week. Maybe they reviewed this, too, before they wrote the show.
Sure.
Benoit is drop-kicked by Ray into Kurt Angle, and then Edge spears Benoit for the pin. Loud amount of boos. But Edge did not spear Benoit into a locker. Edge then lifts Ray into a Hurricane Rana on Eddie off of the ropes. I should also note here that the crowd was extremely upset that Angle and Benoit were eliminated.
Yeah, I really felt the heat of the match was taken out once the two clearly most over guys in the match were taken out.
Then we see a West Coast pop attempt by Ray, who is hit by Chavo with the belt in midair and falls down before he can execute it.
That was Chavo's big move, I guess. Was
hitting with people with the belt.
Yeah, grab the belt and always hit them with it.
And Chavo Guerrero, very good worker, but if you were going to pick a weak link here, it's Chavo. He's very good worker, but you're talking about some phenomenal workers anywhere.
Honestly, four of the best.
Yes. Edge hits a baseball slide to attack Chavo on the floor, and he's on the ground fighting with Chavo. And while this is happening, Eddie Guerrero applies the lasso from El Paso to Rey Mysterio, a move he never really used that much.
It was an awkward-looking move. I mean, it was like an elevated Texas cloverleaf, but it didn't look very secure.
Yeah. And Rey taps out to this, and I was fine with this finish, but it was like, why would Edge just leave the ring to take care of Chavo on the floor while his partner's getting tapped out?
He's pissed off. He's pissed off that this guy kept using belts.
Yeah. I think this match, watching it back, I mean, it was a very good match.
Uh-huh.
I remember at the time being disappointed with it because you had that No Mercy match fresh in your head that you were expecting this to be even better. That when you go into a match with those expectations, it's so hard to exceed them. So I didn't put this match at the level of that tag match. And some week we should probably go back and review that because that was a phenomenal match at No Mercy. This one, very, very good match. Above average, but not match of the year.
Yes. And I got to say props to Cole and Taz here. I thought they did a good job.
They were great during this time period.
And I realized they did a good job because I didn't notice them. That is what you're supposed to be doing as a commentator. Whereas now, so often, all I hear is the commentators during a match.
Imagine now, if Chris Benoit had just come into WWE, he would have been booked like Daniel Bryan. The parallels between the two are so similar. Could you have imagined if in this match you had Cole constantly referring to Benoit as a nerd?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't even fathom that.
Yeah.
And it's just it's such a handicap right now that they have this phenomenal worker in Daniel Bryan. And here's a perfect example of presenting solid wrestling and letting the announcers just tell a story and let the action in the ring speak for itself. And it's everyone was over in this match.
Yep.
Kane is backstage getting ready for the match. It was just constantly after each match they'd show another member of the Elimination Chamber. And Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross note that it's 4-for-4 tonight when it comes to title changes with one more title match still to come, that being the Elimination Chamber match. Then this pay-per-view came to a screeching halt as Chris Nowinski came out to cut a promo on New York fans and saying that the Yankees were just trying to buy a World Series and that New York fans lacked intelligence and they are number one in stupidity. Then Matt Hardy comes out. And this is when he had that Windows Media Player entrance.
Yes, Matt Hardy version 1.
It included these little facts about Matt, such as he only drinks low-fat chocolate milk, and he keeps room temperature at a toasty 75 degrees.
Yeah.
He does a fake babyface promo saying, New York fans aren't stupid. They're losers. And Jim Ross states, where is this going, King? And Lawler replies, I don't know, but I wish it would hurry up and get there. They spent 5 minutes discussing if New York fans are losers or if they're stupid.
They actually had a debate.
And they combine the words to call them lupid, which is what this segment was. I can only imagine that this was booked to be this dreadful segment to set up Scott Steiner debuting, which he did here. Actually, I should correct that. They mentioned that Scott Steiner was on Confidential last night, but this is his first official debut.
Yeah.
Why would they put him on Confidential?
Because nobody watches Confidential.
It's Confidential. Scott Steiner comes up and just destroys these men. He's getting a huge reaction. Again, in New York, probably a good market to debut Scott Steiner. He just suplexes both guys, gets a huge reaction. The audience is chanting Steiner, which they would not be in 2 months in his main event.
Didn't they bark?
They all did the Rick Steiner dog chants. And then we get...
Give me a fucking mic!
I don't know if they cut that out. I heard him say, fuck it. So I heard a fuck in there.
It was clear as day, and I have pulled the clip. Yeah. Give me the fucking mic. And then he just cuts the same Scott Steiner promo you've heard a million times, putting himself over. And that is his debut, everyone. And wow, what a fall for this man. Because 2 months later, he would headline the Royal Rumble with Triple H. One of the worst matches of the year.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we get, I don't know if this aired for you, but we got a plug for Hulk Hogan's book. His first book.
No.
A horrible book, everybody. And the voiceover, it's like Hogan was still under contract with the company at this point, but he was at home and wasn't doing anything with the company at this point. So I know there were some problems, because if you recall that angle way where Hogan put over Brock Lesnar on TV and Brock put the blood all over him, his chest, Hogan was angling for the fact that he put over Lesnar there. He wanted to headline this show and beat Brock for the title.
Yeah.
And they just eventually told Hogan, no, we're not doing that.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. So anyway, this all makes sense here for this DVD plug, where you have the traditional WWE voiceover guy says, find out all about Terry Bollea from a little fat kid who grew up to become world champion.
Are you serious?
From a little fat kid.
That's great.
That's what they referred to him as.
Read the story of the red and yellow warrior through his own eyes. From a little fat kid named Terry Bollea to the larger-than-life superhero that revolutionized sports entertainment.
Then we go from one Terry to the female Terry, who is running after Shawn Michaels, but the camera is locked on her ass as she's running. And she goes to Shawn Michaels. Her question is, Shawn, why do you believe? I was waiting for him to talk about Santa Claus. I didn't know what she was referring to, but why do you believe? And this is cut off for a...
Well, hold on. What does Sean answer? Sean's answer,
what did he
was,
say?
Why do I believe? Well, I believe because I believe. Like, it's just some bullshit like that. And it was all because we were about to be interrupted for an RNN update.
This was when Randy Orton was on the sidelines with a shoulder injury. He was a babyface when he got injured, and they did these RNN updates just sporadically throughout the show where he'd give an update on his shoulder. And he talks about Sherry, the hot stewardess who gave him an extra pillow on the flight. And he was such a dork here. He was like a dorky heel. But it was like these little updates that started to actually get him over. Because
absolutely.
He was so bland when he started. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just total, like...
Like they all
select
are.
A player or create a player in a video game.
And they saw that. They saw... I mean, this was the formula that they've used for a lot of people.
Yeah,
like, I mean, such as The Rock. You just take a very vanilla guy that the crowd is clearly not taking to and just... exaggerate that, make this guy as, you know, a dorky and unlikable as possible. And they were doing this subtly at first with these little things, but then they just got so annoying. And I love these when they came out.
And so these heel vignettes eventually led to Randy Orton joining Evolution, actually, and that's 2003 is where he kind of took off as a heel. So then we go to a video promoting the main event, because it had been a whole hour since we had heard Always, so we got to hear it again. And they promote the fact that this is Michael's first match since SummerSlam. And then we go to an interview with Coach. He's interviewing Triple H with Ric Flair, who says that he will leave as the best, and he has a one-way ticket to hell. And who's going to join him?
Oh.
A one-way ticket to hell.
Great.
Then Eric Bischoff comes out. And he says, I'm back at Madison Square Garden. And I'm thinking to myself, he has probably never been to Madison Square Garden because WCW could never run there. And unless he was a visitor there once for a Rangers or Knicks game, I don't think he's ever been to this arena. We get a graphic going over all the rules. This went very long. Maybe I'm kind of taking it for granted because I know the rules of Elimination Chamber, and I'm trying to think back to when this was the first match. You do want to get the rules across, but this was just long, and it seemed like they were killing time.
At this point, it was only like 9:45. In the time.
And this is when I realized, fuck, this match is going long.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember how long this match went originally, but then WWE, this company, they try a lot of stuff. But sometimes they try a little too much. And they decided that, well, on the upcoming WWE anthology, Saliva is doing a song for Chris Jericho called King of My World. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be performing at the World, and Jericho's going to be coming out. So what if they did his entrance music live from the World, piped into the arena? This did not work.
Did they do that? I fast-forwarded.
Oh, you fast-forwarded through this. Yeah. They had to wait for Saliva to play this entire song. So this was fine for Jericho walking down the entrance. A typical walk down the entrance takes about 30 seconds. And then he stood in the ring for like 2.5 minutes.
Oh,
and weird. Finally this ended.
And this was like the Madison Square Garden entrance, too, which is like half the size of a typical entrance, you know?
Yes.
This was Mania in a big stadium. Sure, I could kind of understand it, but fuck, that sucks.
So we've got Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho, Kane, Booker T, and RVD. And it started off with Triple H and Rob Van Dam, meaning these two were going... it was, for the first match, it was every 5 minutes a new guy joined.
Every 5 minutes.
Since that time, they've chopped it down. It's like 3 minutes, I
think. Well, you could see why.
This was way too
long.
Way, way, way too long.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they reiterated the fact that it's not like War Games where you can't pin a guy till everyone's in. I always hate that because it's like I have no interest then if there's no finish coming for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But here it was you can pin a guy at any point. You can pin him at 2 minutes. They stated that it was $500,000 to construct this, and that was a legitimate figure. $500,000 for this.
Okay.
Early on, Hunter is thrown into the walls, and he is busted open right away for a match that would go 40 minutes.
Yeah.
He was bleeding out
there. He's thrown into the wall, but the wall kind of opened?
Yeah, the first spot, the wall, like the wall,
door.
The chain link wall opens.
Yeah.
It's like
he just breaks through it.
What a piece of shit.
And he just grabs onto it to make sure it doesn't go all
the way. We get a rolling thunder by Van Damme over the top rope. For those that have not seen Elimination Chamber, it's the regular ring surrounded by this steel floor on the outside that has the cubicles for all the guys to come in.
That's level with the ring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jericho was the third guy in the ring. Booker was fourth in. They had Van Damme using the chain link for a lot of spots where he would jump off, and they called him Spider-Man.
Yeah. Van Damme, I mean, it fits with his in-ring style, but Van Damme was definitely the most creative using the cage, doing all those spots.
One of his spots that was not too heralded was he decided he was going to do a frog splash off of the cage door, off one of the cubicles. But you see, he had no room to jump.
No.
And he was going to deliver this splash to Hunter. He goes off and is basically just free falling down, and his knee connects with the throat of Triple H. And this legitimately fucked up Triple H's
trachea.
Yeah, I think he broke his trachea, which I've never broken my trachea, and I hope I never do.
Oh,
that feels incredibly painful. And this was like, what would you say, like 15 minutes into the match?
15-20? This was while Booker was in, so,
Hunter went another 20 minutes he's bleeding.
Which was incredible.
Which, say what you will about Hunter, he really gutted it out during this match.
And you could see just the reaction from Triple H after Van Damme lands his knee right into his throat. He was just holding it.
He was selling like he was dead. And he probably thought he was.
I'm sure it wasn't much selling involved.
And as RVD hits this fucked up splash, Booker then just rolls up RVD and pins him. And based on how RVD was pinned on Impact this week, I am now guaranteeing that Russo goes back and watches old WWE shows and just uses shit from these shows. Because that's like 4 spots off this show that we saw on Impact.
Maybe they're just spots that are often used in pro wrestling.
Fuck.
Maybe Van Damme's just like the type who, I don't know. You got to catch him off guard.
All right.
And he has no defense.
Oh, the crowd, oh, shit. You had the green thing in the Starbucks coffee, and therefore none spilled.
That's it. Thank you.
The crowd boos RVD's elimination, much like when Angle got eliminated. This was somewhat poor booking. RVD was he was still over at this point, despite it being way past the peak of how over he was. Mm-hmm. They were still hoping this guy would eventually get over, and he just wasn't, and
he was. He was over. He just wasn't pushed.
I'm saying this push, he wasn't getting the push that was conducive to the reaction he got from people, and breaking Hunter's trachea probably didn't help. No. Kane's the fifth guy in. He tosses Jericho through the plexiglass.
Through the bulletproof plexiglass.
Yeah, it's not Jericho-proof, though. Jericho comes back with a lion salt onto Booker for an elimination. Jericho is bleeding. And then Michaels is the sixth one in, and he was wearing these horrible tights with, like, cowboy boots and this atrocious haircut.
Yeah, Michaels wrestled the SummerSlam match in his...
jeans.
In his jeans. And, that was fine because
it was a street fight.
Yeah, it was like a one-time only thing. But then now he's back as a legitimate contender, and this was his look. I mean, Michaels used to look really cool with the armbands and, you know, all the chains and all that stuff.
Maybe he thought he'd be too lame for 2002.
Well, perhaps, because now he looked like an independent wrestler. You know, just with the he looked like a creative wrestler on a video game. That's what he looked like, with the short hair.
This was actually, I believe, the first time Michaels and Jericho ever would have worked together during this match.
Yeah.
Kane then goes crazy. He hits a chokeslam on Michaels, Hunter, and Jericho. Then Michaels, all three guys eventually recover. Michaels hits Kane with a super kick, Hunter with the pedigree, then Jericho with the lion salt to pin Kane. So they book Kane pretty strong here in his elimination, taking everyone's finish. The crowd was pretty hot here. Jericho hit another lion salt on Michaels for a two count. Then then Michaels hits a moonsault off the top rope for another two count. This one on Hunter, I believe. Then Jericho jumps off the second rope. His back is towards the ring, and he jumps off the second rope. Hunter hits him in the gut and goes for the pedigree, which was the finish for WrestleMania that year, actually. But then Jericho counters it into the walls of Jericho. Just the fact that we had reviewed WrestleMania, and I remembered that spot. I found that kind of clever. And Michaels then super kicks Jericho to eliminate him. And we're down to Hunter and Michaels, which, as much as people wanted RVD to get pushed, the story going into this match, it made the most sense to come down to these two, the champion and the guy he took out.
Yeah.
And Lawler just became a little kid here, and he yelled, "Do you believe, JR? Do you believe?" Both men were very bloody here. Hunter catapults Sean into the steel. Michaels then hits an elbow drop off of the door, which I can't believe Hunter was like, yeah, go ahead.
Hit me again.
Amazing. Michaels goes for the sweet chin music. It's blocked, and Hunter hits a pedigree. There's a long delay. He finally turns over. Kick out. Crowd is going insane for this. Then a second pedigree by Hunter is countered with a back body drop. Michaels comes back with the sweet chin music, gets the win. Huge pop here, and they do a confetti celebration. And Jim Ross, with this awesome call to finish the pay-per-view, puts this over just tremendously well. For a finish to a pay-per-view, I thought Jim Ross did a great job. These two, it really came across well. However, at this point, there were a lot of question marks about Shawn Michaels. Like, in hindsight, you know, this guy came back to work a fairly regular schedule. Mm-hmm. But at this point, no one knew how much this guy could work.
Yeah.
And it was like, you're taking the title off Lesnar because he can't work for 6 weeks, and we're putting it on a guy who we don't even know if he can do another two or three matches.
Yeah.
But for a one-night pop, I mean, this crowd went crazy for this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I thought Michaels and... I was never a big fan. I'm still not a big fan of the whole Elimination Chamber. I think it limits guys more than it helps them because it constricts their space inside the thing. It's just an awkward structure. And I didn't like the format in this match, especially because of the 5-minute intervals. It just made, like, you know, like even the fact that you can go for finishes beforehand, it just made so much of it seem irrelevant until the very last two. And but with that said, when Michaels and Triple H were in there, it was a pretty good match, and the pop at the end was huge. This whole crowd throughout the whole event was fantastic. in Madison Square.
Yeah, I'm going to give this show an 8 out of 10. It was a really, really good show. You know, you could point at, you know, they kind of booked all of this. Like, they presented a really solid show. They changed all of the titles that were up for grabs in this show. And, you know, this was not a particularly hot period for the WWE, but for this one night, this was a pretty, pretty good show.
Yeah, this, along with the SummerSlam from that year, really stick out in my mind as two very good pay-per-views that the Fed put out.
WrestleMania in Toronto that year was not.
No, not that one. No. But, yes, I also give it an 8 out of 10. It was a solid show, top to bottom.
Yeah, very, very good show. So we'll move over now, and we're going to hear from Jimmy Corderas, who is a WWE referee on the SmackDown brand at this point in time. And we discussed with him the brand split, this specific show, and the Elimination Chamber as well, which he was not the official in this match, but years later he would officiate an Elimination Chamber match. So here is Jimmy Corderas, who you can also hear on Right After Wrestling with Arta Ocal Monday nights on The Score on Sirius 98. Joining us this week on Review Away, it's a rare in-studio guest here, former WWE official Jimmy Corderas joining us. And Jimmy, what do you think of the Review Away studio here? It's quite the impressive closet.
Wow, I'm very impressed. I mean, I haven't seen a closet this well-designed in a long time.
Oh, yes. We put a lot of work into this one. And we're chatting this week about the 2002 Survivor Series. This took place November of 2002. It featured the first ever Elimination Chamber match. And an interesting period here. You were on the SmackDown roster at this point. And my first question was just discussing the brand split and kind of what the reaction was when talent found out about this brand split. Because you had kind of the extreme the year before with WCW going out of business and kind of everyone jockeying for spots. And now a year later, creating two brands where theoretically there'd be more room for guys.
That's exactly how the locker room was feeling about it. I mean, a lot of the guys thought here was an opportunity for them to actually get on television and actually get to show what they have. I mean, before the brand split or the I can't remember how they used to refer to it, but anyways, before the brand split, a lot of guys, you know, you'd have The Rock on both shows. You'd have him on Raw and SmackDown. You'd have Triple H on Raw and SmackDown. It didn't leave a lot of room for other guys to shine.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys found this as a great opportunity for them to really show what they got.
Now, one thing, and it's really emphasized on this show, that they had Eric Bischoff running Raw and Stephanie McMahon's storyline running SmackDown. And they really tried to build it up that these were two contrasting shows and kind of presenting Raw as the show that we're going to bring in the Elimination Chamber. They were throwing out, you know, HLA and making it almost the entertainment show, and SmackDown was kind of your gritty nose, hardworking wrestling show. And they really presented these differences that I think is something really lacking right now with Raw and SmackDown, of trying to make them two distinct entities. I mean, just this past week we see Big Show just popping up on Raw, whereas back then it seemed to be a concerted effort to keep the brands separate and make them very much different entities.
Yeah, it seems like today they do cross over a little too much, I think. Back then, there was actually a little bit of a friendly rivalry between brands. I mean, there was that, you know, not really us versus them in a total shoot sense, but in kind of like a pride kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, and we always looked at it, like you said, Raw was considered the more entertainment-oriented show, and SmackDown was the wrestling show, as we used to call it.
Now, at this time, Paul Heyman was booking SmackDown, and when you look at the history of SmackDown, this might have been its most prosperous period, really. You were getting weekly matches on this show from the likes of Benoit, the Guerreros, Edge, Rey Mysterio. That was just unbelievable in-ring content. Tell us a little bit about any of your interactions with Paul and your thoughts on the show during this kind of fall of 2002 period.
Actually, that was right around the time where I thought that SmackDown was absolutely brilliant. I mean, like, Paul's booking is fantastic. I mean, he's so I know a lot of people talk about how good he is with ECW back in the day and what a great wrestling mind he is, and he is. Okay, I understand the business sense may be a little bit different. Some people have different opinions of him. But Paul was really easy to work with. I mean, Paul was very approachable, and he had such passion. It was amazing. And I think that was the problem with Paul, was he was so passionate that he wasn't afraid to voice his opinion to Vince, and sometimes very vocally. So Vince is very, for lack of a better term, I'm trying to put this into the right perspective. Vince doesn't mind listening to other people's ideas. It's all in the way it's presented. And sometimes Paul's over-passionate, if you know what I mean, because he feels so passionate about the product and what he presents. So I guess that's where they butted heads a little bit. But working with Paul, I mean, if you had ideas, you can go up to him and talk to him, and he was very receptive. And he never told you that's a bad idea. He always encouraged you to come up with more and to expand on your ideas. For example, if you came up to him with a proposal for a storyline and you pitch your storyline to Paul, he would say, "That sounds great, but what's next?"
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where does it go from there? Come to me when you figure out where it goes from there, then we'll work on something. I mean, like for lack of a better term, he's a great pep talk artist. He knows how to talk to people, to motivate people to get the best out of them.
Now, on this show, Brock Lesnar came into the show as the WWE champion, and this being in Madison Square Garden, it was an unbelievable reaction for Lesnar. I mean, they were still kind of presenting him as a heel, but the turn pretty much took place on this show where Heyman turned on Lesnar and Big Show got the win. I mean, tell us just a little bit about Brock Lesnar, any of your kind of work in the ring with Lesnar, because this guy was just a physical freak at this point, and just I thought he was handled so well in those first couple of months to at this point where he was the WWE champion, only on the roster for about 8 months.
Yeah, Brock was, like you said, he was a total freak of nature. He ridiculously strong, unbelievable. And here's a guy at his size who can do a shooting star press.
Yeah.
You know, halfway across the ring. I know you remember the WrestleMania 19 incident where he actually undershot his thing. But that was more, I think, nerves and anything else. But before that, every other time, he's always hit it. He's very agile. He's very fast for a guy his size. And you know what? They did it right with him. They booked him as a monster, and he was a monster. I mean, he was a legit monster. And the way they booked him, I thought, was perfect. It rivaled kind of what WCW did with Goldberg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, in a certain sense. And I guess the only way to get him over, not the only way, but the way he was getting over with the crowd, I mean, the people were responding to this, and they saw this in him, and they saw something special in Brock that there was no choice but to turn him babyface.
Now, one of the highlights while I was watching this show that I thought you'd be a perfect guest to have on, there was a cruiserweight match on this show where Billy Kidman beat Jamie Noble for the cruiserweight title. And for me, the best spot of the match was where Noble gave Kidman a draping DDT off the top ropes. And Kidman went like vertically down, like head first into the mat. And your facials reacting to this spot were just awesome. Like, you just sold like Kidman was dead here for this spot.
Well, for those who haven't seen it, go back and look at it. Because if you see this DDT, this looked like he actually just crammed him into the... I mean, it looked absolutely fabulous. I mean, from a wrestling standpoint, it looked great. But from a shoot standpoint, I thought, oh my God,
Yeah, I don't think it's a spot that they had seen in WWE at this point in time. I know Rob Van Dam would eventually take that kind of spot later on. But for me, I think that was the first time you saw that kind of a DDT-style move. And the audience just, like, totally popped for this move. And it's almost could have been the finish to the match, however Kidman was going over.
Yeah, but, and that's a lot of credit to Billy Kidman. The way he took that bump was fabulous.
And I guess we'll just wrap up with Paul Heyman. I mean, I always look back at that SmackDown period. It was like 6 months of just where SmackDown was just clear-cut the number one brand for the WWE. And it was just a few short months later that Heyman was removed. And I guess you kind of alluded to it there. Do you feel that Heyman was a style of guy that just working inside of a box underneath someone, it just was not conducive to his style coming from ECW where, you know, the buck stopped with him and now trying to work in a corporate structure?
I think you hit the nail right on the head there. It's Paul needs a little bit of freedom to do what he wants to do creatively. I mean, everything in the WWE, as we know, goes through Vince McMahon. And Paul Heyman's not like the type of person who needs that creative filter. Paul can put on a good show, and he knows what he's doing. So for him to have that creative filter in Vince McMahon and having to channel everything through that venue, that direction, I think kind of took his toll on him. I mean, you know, for all those years in ECW, he had all that creative freedom to do what he wanted, and he also gave his talent a lot of leeway to create themselves. And I guess the whole structured way that WWE works with their talent, and that sort of kind of didn't sit with him very well.
And also, your thoughts on the Elimination Chamber when it was first introduced, and did you ever get to work a chamber match?
Yes, I got to work a chamber match in, I believe it was 08, where, who was it? It was Undertaker, Batista, if I'm not mistaken, Viscera, MVP, Finley.
And, oh, okay, right. The it would have been the No Way Out pay-per-view.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it's hard to... man, it's that structure takes a lot of toll on the boy's body. I mean, like, yeah, taking a bump in the ring is bad enough, but having, I remember Finley getting choke slammed on the steel grate, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my goodness, like, how do these guys do it? Yeah. Thank God I'm just a referee, because when you're younger, you always have these aspirations of being a wrestler, and watching him perform in the ring, and I said, I made a good choice.
Yeah, it was the structure was one of the more impressive ones.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
One other thing is, because that was the first time, we had to wait after the event. We had to wait for this actually chamber thing to get torn down before we could take the ring down.
Oh, really?
Which took all night. It was like 4 a.m. before we could start taking the ring down. This thing was monstrous. It was huge. It weighed like, I don't know how many tons, but thank God we didn't have to touch that part. But this thing is a monstrosity. It's a lot of work putting that thing together.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of WWE signature structures where it's just, the visual alone kind of sells it. Much like when Hell in a Cell was first introduced, like, you just step back and look at this thing, and it's pretty impressive right there. Jimmy, every Monday night, you and Art O'Cal, you guys are doing Right After Wrestling on the Score, Sirius 98, and you guys are doing a great job with that. Any quick stuff we can look forward to with you and Art coming up?
Well, this past week we just had an interview with Jacques Rougeau live on the radio show, which was very good. Jacques, you know, class guy, you know, mm-hmm. he's got three more matches left. He's doing his retirement tour in December, and he talked about that. He talked about a little bit about the late great Edward Carpentier, who recently passed away, and the legacy of the Rougeau family. And we also did an interview that's available on podcast, but with Ken Patera, which was very actually entertaining, for lack of a better word. Yeah.
Ken Patera, you can always enjoy some great stories from him. So go check out Right After Wrestling. It's available. You can get the podcast at thescore.com/radio, and they air every Monday night, where the title kind of gives you the time right there, Right After Wrestling. Thanks so much, Jimmy, for joining us here on Review Away.
Thank you very much, John.
That was Jimmy Corderas, and of course, he always does pay-per-view previews and reviews with myself for the Fight Network, and we also put them online at youtube.com/thefightnetwork, so you can check those out. So now we'll get into everyone's feedback, Way, and there was a fair amount this week, so let's start off here with Andy Gordon. Finished your review of Halloween Havoc 1999. I rewatched the event on YouTube and found that it was just like that TNA show 2 weeks ago. Seeing as how it is almost November, maybe you could review Genesis 2005 or Survivor Series 96. The Genesis show featured a six-man main event and a tag match with Joe and Chris Daniels. Keep up the reviews.
Peter T. Agard. Did anyone else notice that John said Alex Wright was renamed Berlin like the country? Damn, homie.
Yeah, damn, homie. I apologize, everyone. I did not catch that, but I'm glad everyone did.
Yeah. You also called Abu Dhabi... Wait, you called... What'd you call it? You called Abu Dhabi a city within Dubai.
Did I say that?
No, you did.
Well, what do I know? I'm just from the country of Toronto.
Okay.
Sam Kennerly. So finally got round to get... So finally I got around to watching the reunion show for the Jersey Shore, and nothing was answered about anything, really. All this shit about the note and no resolution. This show is directed by Vince Russo, without a doubt, and I do not doubt the entire program is worked and presented as reality, as I find most U.S. reality shows are, i.e. The Simple Life, Wife Swap, and A Shot of Love with Tila Tequila.
Yeah, I'm done with the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, I don't think it's coming back, folks, for season 3 on this show, at least.
Well, we'll see. Jack Pisco, I want to believe Vince's fan appreciation night was sincere.
Of course it was.
One thing, though, why hasn't this kind of house show happened before? Will it happen again?
No. Great point, folks. Great point. Ahmad Buttons. I'm going to have to go with the approach that the WWE is more racist than you give them credit for. You've got Michael Hayes, a booker, who's a known racist. Vince McMahon, who in addition to having a homoerotic fetish with big muscle heads, has called Sabu derogatory Muslim terms on TV and pushed the Muhammad Hassan character. Joey Styles, who is a known right-wing whack job who posted all this shit about Barack Obama being a Muslim/socialist, even so far as to linking his middle name to an Iraqi dictator. While I understand that it's counterproductive to business, a claim that the right wing would make, to hold back any performer based solely on race, it's not stopped businesses from doing so. People want to point to Bobby Lashley as an example of how the Fed isn't racist, but dude left after a racial incident. Of course, I don't work at the WWE or know anyone, but if we're going by former employees and backstage reports, then it's hard to strike down claims of racism.
Valid points. Sam Kennerly, GCSEs are similar to SATs that the U.S. has. It's the end of high school exams. We then have A-levels in college, and if you're successful, you go into degrees in university.
George Raposte, I didn't send my cable bill back in the days. I didn't order them. But recently, within the past year or so, they had it where if you ordered 3 pay-per-views in a row, WrestleMania and 2 after, and send in your cable bills, you would get a free ringside WrestleMania 25 chair. So I did that, considering I had like 10 buddies over for each pay-per-view. The WrestleMania 25 ringside chair only cost myself like $15, LOL.
Hold on. Oh, okay, so he only paid $15 for the 3 pay-per-views.
Yes.
That's a worthwhile one to take a chair home.
Yep.
Andrew Omoltsuk. I remember watching wrestling during the 99 Survivor Series. I ate up every angle and then discovered sites like OneWrestling.com and The Observer, revealing that none of this stuff was real. It was like discovering Santa Claus doesn't exist and that he uses his political stroke to book himself strong in order to get himself over. I can't believe pay-per-views like this cost $40 on videotape at the time. Great review on so many levels. And John, great work on the Tiger Jeet Singh public school piece. It's nice to see pedagogy and pro wrestling in some harmonious conjunction.
Yes, I actually wasn't on that shoot, but you were with one of our reporters, Lily.
Myself and Lily Lazar Green, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So you were there for that entire proceedings.
Yeah.
Was it bizarre seeing like a public school assembly with the Destroyer in the middle of it?
It was because, yeah, he just walked in the middle of it. For those of you who don't know, you can see the piece on our Facebook group. Tiger Jeet Singh has a school named after him here in Canada, and we went to cover the official opening, so check that out.
We keep going on here to Cody Brown. Excellent review as usual, guys. I had a quick question that someone on here should be able to answer for me. During the Pollock's Power Pole audio that was at the end of this week's review away, did Vince McMahon drop the N-bomb? I listened to it like a dozen times and couldn't tell if it was in fact the dreaded N-bomb. Can someone please clarify? Yes, it was, everybody. It was from the Survivor Series a few years ago.
Patrick McHugh, God bless you for watching Impact, the worst show in the history of the earth. I didn't actually mind Impact that much. I mean, I went in expecting to see the worst show, but it actually wasn't that bad, and I actually enjoyed it.
It wasn't horrible this week. Didn't make me want to see the pay-per-view, but it was. I've seen a lot worse. Daniel Stack, hey fellas, I enjoyed the review of Survivor Series 99. That card was really lame, though, and so was show's weak title reign at the time. I remember him curtain jerking on SmackDown and Raw as the champ. I think the WWE was so white hot then that despite pretty much anything they did, they kept rolling. Pollock, loved your mix of stand up for the WWE clips mixed with those crazy WWE sound bites. However, Kurt Angle wanting to make Jesus tap was hilarious, and anyone who took it seriously needs to lighten up. Best podcast around. Keep it up, Ting and Pollock.
Forrest Bowling, I actually never knew the context of the Stone Cold car angle. I was 4 at the time. But hearing you guys talk about it was awesome. Could Rikishi be the mystery GM? He's WWE's go-to mystery guy.
Who knows, everybody?
He was mentioned on TV this week.
Was he?
They showed the second generation stand-up for WWE.
Oh, thing. Yeah, right,
and
right.
The Usos mentioned him, that's all. So, yes, he could be the GM. Why not?
Dropping hints. Jellyfish McSavoy. Nice Survivor Series review, guys. I must say, that was a hell of a Jim Ross impersonation by John, which tickled me for the rest of the day. How about Way and John taking it in turns each week, performing their favorite wrestlers' promos? No. Or entertaining us with more impressions. Seems John has a hidden talent for this, which I think could draw huge on the internet podcast scene. I keep up the keep on the great work, guys.
I would love that idea. I would love to do a whole podcast.
No, we're not sideshow attractions here.
We're serious, huh? All right, and then we got Jay Hunter. I took Vince mocking Linda spending of $50 million as an admission that she is going to fail. Since when did R-Truth start saying what's up in his new song? It sounds like he's given up trying to get crunk over and wants to go back to his old song.
I didn't even notice that.
Well, he's just saying what's up because it's really what the only thing that he's got over. And I always thought the new song was Vince's idea. To get the new song out.
I think that's their plan, is that every couple of months they want him to have a new song.
Oh,
so they can put out more.
Wait.
Yeah.
Then we'll get an album, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole... I'm pretty sure Vince knew that Linda didn't really have a chance by the time that skit aired on Monday.
No, and then she pretty well got blown out in the election. Shy Avigan, John, what is an acolyte? The word acolyte is derived from the Greek word... Acolouthos, meaning companion, attendant, or helper. In many Christian denominations, an acolyte is anyone who performs ceremonial duties such as lighting altar candles. Bradshaw and Farouk actually originally were paired in October of 98 as Hell's henchmen under the guidance of the Jackal. Once he left, they joined the Ministry of Darkness. I'm totally blank on that period of when they were with the Jackal. But
Ryan Gilbert. Great review of Survivor Series 99 and Raw this past week. During the week of Halloween, I was taking the bus from St. John, New Brunswick to Halifax, Nova Scotia, to attend a con. About a half hour outside of St. John, the bus broke down. To pass the time, I listened to your review of Halloween Havoc 1999. I waited for about an hour for a replacement bus. Everything was fine once I got on the second bus, but about 5 minutes on the road, it broke down. So for the second time, I waited an hour for yet another bus to pick me and the fellow passengers. As annoying as it was having two buses break down, at least it wasn't as bad as having to watch Halloween Havoc 1999. Well, it was bad watching that show, but having two buses break down would have sucked more, I think.
Steven Jensen, in reference to your Survivor Series 99 review, you were talking about how they almost assured Angle to get booed based on his working style. In hearing a Kurt Angle shoot, he noted that Vince told him they're going to chant boring during the match, and it was intentionally done. During the middle of the match, the ref told Kurt that Vince wanted him to get on the mic and yell, "You don't boo an Olympic gold medalist." Kurt wasn't aware this was going to happen. Regardless, like you stated, it got over huge in the long run. Vince used to have such patience with his angles. Wish this would come back in today's product.
That's a really good tidbit of info, and good for Vince for doing things like
didn't
that.
Didn't we watch that shoot?
No. You mean the TNA?
Oh, I don't know if he's referring to the TNA DVD, the five-hour Kurt Angle DVD.
They have to make them worth your monies.
I guess so.
Stephen Kyle Gosun. As someone who doesn't watch TNA regularly, I'm very pleased regarding review and impact. I've been interested in looking for a jump on point. Listening to your reviews will help me find one. Thanks, guys.
Looking for a jump on point.
Absolutely. That's what we're here to provide.
Well, good luck. Like the television show, it goes very fast. So.
There are many fans who want to jump on the TNA wagon.
Dev Clark, my review of Survivor Series 2002. I thought SS 2002 was a good pay-per-view. The tables match was okay with the stars that were in it. Billy Kidman and Jamie Noble had a very good, at least to me it was. I assume he means match. Maybe entrances. The triple threat elimination match was a classic. The main event was awesome. The first elimination chamber was cool. Well, he should have just reviewed this for us.
Yeah.
I liked that Shawn Michaels won the match and the world title. Being his second match in 4 years and winning the world title is amazing. My rating for the show out 10 would be... it's meant to be 6 out of 10, right? Not negative 6 out of 10, I would assume.
No.
Okay, 6 out of 10 from Dev Clark.
Okay, well, thank you for your feedback.
What
anyway,
a review.
Dev. Jack Pisco, WWE Raw was not the best show they've done, but I did like the McMahon segment. The complaint was since Triple H was destroyed by Sheamus and on the shelf as a result, he shouldn't have been in that skit. I disagree with that because when it comes to those comedy bits, continuity goes out the door. Remember when R-Truth was blown to bits by McGruber? I don't remember. Besides, give props to Freddie Prinze Jr. for making his cameo. He was way better in this than JY was on Impact. I hope he is the anonymous GM.
K. Kathy Deal, hearing you talk about the genuine pewter pendant gift reminded me of this. My daughter's friend is the graphic designer for WWE Global, but knows nothing about wrestling. While visiting WWE headquarters, she was allowed into the vault, a room full of WWE merch, and told to choose some gifts for her wrestling friends. We got a WWE Advent calendar, whose chocolate had expired the year before.
What is that? What is an Advent calendar?
You've never heard of an Advent calendar?
No.
You buy them at grocery stores? Yeah, for Christmas. Oh. It's like the days leading up to Christmas.
That is disgusting. What was the chocolate shaped in?
Undertaker's symbol. I don't know. A CM Punk action figure that could win the Scott Putski Award, a 2-year-old Raw vs. SmackDown Xbox game, and the ultimate collector's copy of the John Cena DVD set, complete with t-shirt and wristbands. Now, those are some deluxe prizes.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow, the WWE prize vault.
That's something worth fantasizing about. Forrest Bowling. Do you guys plan on reviewing an episode of Family Feud TNA edition? I remember the Weakest Link episode being great.
Maybe. Have you caught any of these? I have not.
I don't even know where you would find Family Feud these days.
Sean Prasad. Hey, guys. I'm looking forward to the Impact review. I usually don't watch Impact because I rather listen to the Brian and Vinny show review, which is a lot more entertaining. Having you guys review it will be a great add-on to my Fridays. If this isn't a weekly thing, I can understand. It is Impact, after all.
Danny Powers, hi guys, I think I might have a cool idea for a new podcast you both could do. Or if it's too much work to do, another podcast, maybe it could be a new Facebook group. It's similar to Ask Away in that it's open topic, but basically you both would review anything in the world. Hence the name, Review a World. This is the email John was referring to earlier. For example, it'd be really funny to hear you guys talk about how awful a new movie or TV show is, how annoying telemarketers could be, which new cars you like.
Yeah, because that's what me and Wade always are talking about.
What you think about fake people, or anything else positive or negative about life in general. The negative reviews would be definitely funnier. Maybe by creating a Facebook group to go along with the podcast, you could read some funny and well-written rants members of the group could post on the wall. I know it might be too much work with you guys as busy as you are already, but I think this is something you both would have a lot of fun with, and I'm sure it would be highly entertaining.
Yeah, we don't have any time for this.
I don't.
You guys don't understand. When we're not doing these shows, we're watching wrestling, okay? There's barely enough time to catch up now, and
Review a world.
We have no time to go see movies and buy cars.
No.
Sorry.
Or talk about fake people, though we have our opinions.
And finally, from Ahmad, I love this podcast. You need to review my life. And then he gives examples. Do you want to read this way?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, Way. So it's Ahmad Buttons, 1997. To give you an idea of what was going on in storyline at that time, Ahmad had just seen his first nude girl on the internet, and this is the fallout from that.
Sounds interesting.
I don't know about that. Way.
You guys should just script our podcast.
These people are nuts. But thank you. We appreciate all of you for listening, whether you like us or hate us. As long as you listen to us and join the group, I don't care.
Yeah.
That brings us to an end for this review, everybody. I appreciate all of you for listening. You can always go to reviewaway.com. That's reviewaway.com. And check us out there. Next week, Way, I'm going to change things up. I was originally going to pick a Survivor Series, but then I got a DVD in the mail. It is Steve Austin's new movie, Hunt to Kill. So I thought we could review that because I have to watch it before Tuesday as I'm going to be interviewing Steve Austin. So we will, regardless of whether it's on Review Away next week, Steve Austin will be on The Law next week. So we'll either have him. I only have like 10 minutes with him, so I don't know if there's enough to really separate some between Review Away and The Law.
Yeah.
So he'll probably just be on The Law. But we will have a review of the movie next week in conjunction with that interview as we watch Steve Austin for 97 minutes hunting to kill.
Have you seen The Expendables?
Yes, I have.
How did you like Steve Austin in The Expendables?
He was fine in it.
Have you seen have you seen the Condemned?
No, I never saw The Condemned.
I've never seen any Steve.
Seen any of his outside of The Expendables. I don't think I've seen any. This is like he's one of the main guys in this.
Huh.
So,
all right. Cool. I always appreciate something other than professional wrestling. It always changes things up.
Well, we had a lot of fun with Wrong Side of Town, so let's try Hunt to Kill.
Yeah.
That's going to be coming up next week. And Way, to finish off this edition of Review Away, what are we going out with? You do not plan these ahead of time, do you?
Hey, I'm so concentrated on this professional wrestling. Let's go out with the only song we can go out with. Oh, wait, you probably started the show off. Let's end it with the Chris Jericho song by Saliva, whatever song that they did.
King of my world.
King of my world. Why not?
Saliva, bookends, review away. We'll chat with you Tuesday for Review of Raw.
Of my destiny.